Sound of Hockey episode 124. We're calling this one the Adam Foote episode. Why are we calling it that, John?
Well, Adam Foote played for the Colorado Avalanche in the 90s and probably into 2000. Played with Columbus a bit too. But in 1997-98 season, he had 124 penalty minutes.
I was going to say, I don't remember him as a big point getter, so that sounded like a
no, he wasn't.
Pretty
but I did want to bring him up. Because he's got two kids, Cal Foote and Nolan Foote, who are kind of prospects that are kind of working their way up. Cal Foote's playing with Tampa Bay right now and starting to kind of emerge on that lineup. So.
And here is where Andy makes a joke about 2 feet. Go ahead, Andy.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You did it before.
Yep.
It's foot, not feet, Darren.
Right, right. This is Sound of Hockey. I am Darren Brown, at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter, joined as always by Andy Ide. Hello, Andy.
How's it going? I'm at Andy Ide on the Twitter.
And John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL2 Seattle on the Twitter.
And we are coming to you from Seattle. This is going to be a fun episode. We don't have a guest this week, but we have some good stuff to talk about, so we're pretty excited for this. Also, no review to share, so I don't know what that's about. I see some people...
Hey, come on.
Yeah, I see some people rating us, but then not writing anything. So just take an introspective look here as you're hitting those 5 stars on iTunes, which we also appreciate. But as you're hitting those 5 stars, just take a couple minutes to write a little something, and then we'll read it next
week.
Don't
be shy. Don't be shy. Say hi to us.
There's no shyness here. There's no need for that. We're just going to read it for our dozens of listeners.
Dozens.
Yeah.
Dozens.
Okay, we finished our expansion draft profile project that we've been doing for about 3 months on soundofhockey.com.
Yes.
And it's been a good, labor of love. I am happy that we're done with it. But also, I'm kind of like, hey, what are we going to write about next? Because that was some pretty straightforward built-in context for us, but I'm proud to announce that we have plenty of ways that we can use the expansion draft to our advantage moving forward. So keep checking in on soundofhockey.com every single day because we have great content there.
There will be other stuff on the website too. It won't all be expansion.
Yeah, but that seems to be what gets the people going the most. We wanted to just comment really quickly on our teams of interest that kind of stuck out to each of us from this process. Andy, who is your favorite team that you got to profile?
Well, my favorite was Carolina, but the whole process is doing a handful of these. It really shows you like how many moving parts there are to this. And, we made our best guesses by what the current situations were, but it could all change. And there's just a lot of if this happens or if that happens. So it was kind of fascinating just to see, work through this and imagine yourself being somebody who actually had to make these decisions that counted. But Carolina was interesting to me because they're an interesting team, right? They're a good team. They've got a lot of depth. They've got a lot of youth. They've got a mix of youth and older players. But because of that, they're going to have to expose good players. There's no way around it for them. And a couple of those players, as far as that I'm interested in, if you look at the forwards, number one is Morgan Geeky, who we've talked about before on the podcast. He played for Tri-City, a big-time goal scorer. And he is now up and playing with them, but he's only 22. So he would be a pretty good, if they project him to continue to score, that would be a good guy to get on the ground floor. Another forward that was interesting is someone Darren's familiar with is Nino Niederreiter.
Oh, yeah.
He's on the bubble of being exposed, but there's a good chance he could be exposed. And he's been, he's kind of been inconsistent. Last year he didn't score very well, but if you look at his underlying numbers, he was a very good possession player, made those around him better. He just didn't find the back of the net last year, but he's off to a decent start this year. So he's a player to watch for them. If he has a really great season, they probably will go ahead and protect him, but he's a guy who could be exposed, and he's an interesting guy. He's a little bit older, but he has some salary with him, $5 million, but they got to hit that 60% of the salary cap, so they're going to have to spend some money in this expansion draft. But defensively is where I really get excited about this team, because there's two players that I think would be great pickups. This day and age, you have to have a puck moving defenseman. They've got two guys that are going to be available or should be available. One is Hayden Fleury, who they picked in the first round a few years back, who Ron Francis picked in the first round, I should add, too. In 2014, he's only 24. He didn't come out of the gates like you would want a first-round pick to do, but he's a solid, solid player. And then Jake Bean, who I really like, who folks around here may remember from his time in Tri-City. He's also another first-round pick, picked by Ron Francis, of course. He was the leading scorer for AHL defenseman last year. Probably would have already been in the NHL if Carolina didn't have such a deep defensive core. He's in the NHL now. He is playing in the NHL now. He'd be a very good pick as well. So there's like two or three choices here that Ron Francis is going to have that are pretty solid players and could be not, you know, can't miss one. So he's got a tough choice. He knows a lot of these players too. He drafted a lot of them. That's another interesting element to it.
Yep. John?
Well, just for context, I also have really enjoyed doing these and reading, you know, your guys' profiles as well as the other writers we have on the site. And I feel myself watching games with the watch list in mind.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, he might be available. Oh, yeah. He might be available. Like, it's given me a different kind of way to watch the games. I don't, like, overly focus on them, but I'm definitely aware and keenly aware of who's, you know, when they score. I'm like, yep, he might be available. Tampa Bay is really stacked, and they also are up against the salary cap. So there's probably, I listed, like, 8 forwards. I hadn't seen another team where we listed potentially 8 guys.
No,
but
yeah.
There's, like, 4 that are older, between 29 and 31, that kind of can put in, like, 40 points a season. And then there's, like, this younger tier of 22 and 23-year-olds. And, like, there's really a reason you could select either from either category. And they're all roughly the same and bring a different element. So it's just a question if you need a left wing or center or whatever. But, you know, because Alex Killorn should be available. He's making about $5 million in cap hit. So Tyler Johnson, Yanni Gourde, and Andre Palat are all in that kind of $5 million cap hit. And one thing that's not clear here is, or I haven't talked about, is Nikita Kucherov is in long-term injured reserve right now.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And his salary is about $9 million. He might be available. He should be available for the playoffs. So that means next year they're going to have to find $9 million worth of cap space. Ouch. Let's say you package up Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat. There's your $9 million in salary that you move to Seattle. And so I could definitely see a scenario playing out that way. Maybe it's wishful thinking because I definitely want Tyler Johnson on the team, but I'm super biased and I'm well aware of it. And there's definitely better players to select from than him. So, you know, similar to Carolina, they can't trade themselves out of this situation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're going to lose somebody good. And so there's even some younger guys that are 22, 23 that might be worth, you know, if you want to kind of go younger, you could pick them. I mean, some of them haven't made the NHL yet, but Tampa, man, I'm excited about what we get out of Tampa.
And before I give my selection as my favorite team that, well, we covered as a group because I didn't actually write the one that I'm picking, but I found it really interesting too, your comment about, you know, keeping your eye on the players that are now playing. And already I'm starting to see the wheels turn, at least in my head, that like our protected lists may not even match. Like if we had written them 3 weeks later, we might have come up with something different on some of these teams, right? Like
yeah.
I wrote about Los Angeles, right? And I'm like, oh, they'll definitely expose, you know, Elias Anderson and Grundstrom and whatever. Grundstrom's had like just sick goals, so I'm like, oh
damn it,
maybe. Right, like it is interesting how quickly I think these things are going to change. And like Andy said, we took our educated guesses, but yeah, I mean it's a constantly changing thing, and your best players now may not be your best players at the end of the season, and you may have different opinions. Think about it from the goalie aspect, right? Like what about Matt Murray, right? He was going to be one of these hot commodities not long ago when it was him and Tristan Jarry in Pittsburgh. Now he's on Ottawa and playing terribly with a terrible Ottawa team. So, you know, it's just, it's interesting. Every day it seems to be evolving a little bit. But anyway, the team that I picked, and again, I didn't write this one, but Colorado Avalanche, I think, you know, as deep as they are as a team, it shows in what they're going to end up exposing to the Kraken. So here's a few players. Jonas Donskoy, JT Compher, Tyson Jost is kind of on the bubble. We think he could be protected, but maybe not. Same with Brandon Saad, who's actually going to be a UFA. I think he does like it in Colorado, so my guess is he resigns there, which means he's protected, so that might push out Jost, for example. Then on defense, you have Devon Taves and Ryan Graves, which kind of rhymes, even though it's spelled very differently. And then Pavel Francouz, who, you know, he was a big-time, like, emerging goalie last season. So, ton of talent there in Colorado, too. And, man, it's fun. It's really fun. And, you know, we started this thing, and the first few that we did, it was, like, Detroit and, like, I don't know, just some teams that you're like, wow, this is going to be really easy for these guys to protect everyone that they need to protect. Yeah. And then you get towards the end of it and you're like, wait a minute, Tampa Bay is exposing half of their team and they're all really good players. Yeah. So
it's a total recency bias too, because Carolina, Colorado, and Tampa, we saw them a lot in the playoffs, and we saw some of these players probably more than we would in a regular season. And so now we're like, hyper aware of the skill on some of these guys, particularly Tampa, because they won. And a lot of those guys kind of contributed to win the Stanley Cup. So I know we have a total recency bias in our analysis here, but it's pretty cool.
All right, let's kick it over to our alleged WHL correspondent, Andy Ide, for WHL Update. What do you have, Andy, alleged WHL correspondent?
Well, some big news this week, because the U.S. division, You've heard of it?
Yep, heard of it.
They have announced that they're going to restart their season on March 19th.
Wow, how about that?
Yeah, we talked last week about the governor giving the okay for the state to, for those guys' teams to play. Mm-hmm. So a couple of days later, the league announced that they have a start date. Still a ton of questions and a lot of details that still come from that. Like one is, where will the Portland Winterhawks play? Because it was just the governor of Washington, not Oregon. So they may be playing some of their games in Kent at the Showa Center, which would be pretty strange. We don't know for sure yet. A reporter down there said that what he heard was that they were going to train in Vancouver. That's where they're going to practice, in Vancouver, Washington, and play games up here. So it would be kind of odd to have the Winterhawks have their home ice be Showa Center, the home of their bitterest rivals. So keep an eye on for that. We still don't know a lot of stuff. We do know Tri-City is going to be on TV. All their home games will be on television in Kennewick. We don't know yet dates on when players are going to arrive. I talked to T-Bridge GM Bill LaForge today, and he didn't know, or at least he wouldn't tell me when they were supposed to come back. So it's going to look different. It's going to be 24 games. It's going to be a different season this year for sure. But at least we'll get some hockey here locally.
You and I had a little discussion about this, you know, and it was with the context. So I was watching Seth Jarvis playing for the Chicago Wolves when this kind of announcement came out. And I don't know why they would send him back. Right? Why would they send these guys back? They don't have to because he's playing there now, and that's not part of the rules.
So, in non-COVID times, the CHL and NHL have an agreement that let me finish.
Okay.
In non-COVID times, the agreement between the NHL and the CHL is that before you're 20, you can only play in the NHL or go back to junior. So, obviously, that's not really relevant for this year. But about a month ago, the NHL and CHL announced that what they will do this year is allow those signed prospects to play in the NHL, or the AHL, until his junior team is ready to go. So he will have to be sent back. That's the agreement. Now, we don't know when that'll be. I expect there'll be some quarantine time. We've seen it already. Jake Neighbors got sent back from St. Louis last week when the WHL announced the Central Division is going to go in a couple weeks. So we've already seen it once. There's guys in the BC division that are still on hold, right? So they'll still be playing in their AHL. Other friend of the pod, Gage Gonzalez, is still with Tampa right now in their system. So he'll be sent back at some point.
The fact that it's going to be a shortened season and they basically have to quarantine for a certain, like, let's just say a week, that stinks for them, right? For their development. And there's no fans, so there's no, like, prospect draw that the WHL teams need those players back for. So
I get what you're saying, but that's the agreement. So there's really no choice.
Well, I know, but like, this is unprecedented times, and the fact there's no fans and there's, you know, they made this agreement 2 months ago.
How do you know that their development's better served in the AHL, not the WHL?
I think the NHL team decides.
How do they know?
Who would know better than an NHL team?
They've had the kid in their system for 3 weeks.
Yeah, but they know how to develop players, and they've done this hundreds of times, right?
I mean, I think there are players that at 19 would have been better served off in the AHL, but they got sent back.
Saying they should all stay. I'm just saying a guarantee. Like, I think the it should be a little bit more flexible.
There has been talk about looking at that rule and seeing what could be done. I don't know that we're there yet, but there has been talk of that because there are cases where, you know, is this kid better off here or there? I don't think Seth Jarvis is better off in the AHL, if you ask my opinion of it. Just he's only 18. He's not the biggest kid in the world. So I think he's better served coming back for one more year, just like Ty Smith was. You know, Ty Smith came back at 19 and look where he is now, you know, having a great season.
Well,
with New Jersey.
Ty Smith would have done if he was in the AHL at 18. I get that. I understand the rule. Just saying, this year is like,
I'm pretty confident saying Ty Smith should deserve to come back those next 2 years.
So I've sat here very quietly and listened to all of this, and I actually think I'm going to side with Andy on this one, which is that
our alleged WHL correspondent.
Yeah, but I think that it's like, it's an anomaly in terms of what's happening this year, of course. But I also think that when they said, okay, we're going to send some younger guys to the AHL this year so that they can keep developing, but we really want to make sure that you send them back to us because they're all our best players. right? So, I mean, I think that that's kind of fair. Like, that was the deal, right? A deal's a deal. You made the deal going into this thing, knowing that at some point you were hopefully going to play. It would probably be a shortened season, but please send us back our best players when we start playing. And I think that right, that actually makes some sense.
A lot of what I've read is that this mini season, if you will, that's essentially a pod of five teams, is all about development. And I think playing competitive games is part of development. But I just don't, I think the context has changed from when they originally made that deal back in, what was it, November?
All right, well, that's enough about that WHL talk. Let's talk about some other WHL talk with our WHL correspondent, Andy Ide. Andy, hello, how are you?
There was some other little bit of USHL news up in the NHL. We had some debuts, which is kind of fun to see all the time. Austin Strand from the former Thunderbird got his made his NHL debut for the Kings this weekend. Big fan of his because he was undrafted. I root for those guys. He signed as a 20-year-old with the Kings when he was in Seattle. Interesting story when he was in Red Deer, who they got him from, Sutter, over the coach over there, didn't want him to get involved in the offense. So he was a shutdown, stay-at-home D-man. Seattle and Steve Konowalczyk and Matt Odette saw that he had some skill there. And he scored 8 goals in his first 30 games when he got traded, which is more than I think his last 2 years combined. And then his last year, his 20-year-old year, he was given the freedom and he scored 25 goals. And that's when LA signed him. He's the fifth guy from that T-Bird championship team to play in the NHL, which is pretty good to have 5 guys on a WHL team end up at one point in the NHL. And then for that same game, ironically, that he was playing on the other side was Dylan Coughlin, former Tri-City American, made his debut with the Vegas Golden Knights.
Ah.
So he had 2 debuts in that game. And that same series, because they were playing the Kings, not an NHL debut, but a first goal for former Spokane Chief Jared Anderson Dolan, who we've talked about before on the podcast. He had just gotten called back up from their minor league team. He played in the NHL a little bit last year, but he scored his first goal. It was a goal that tied the game before they lost, but pretty cool to see him finally get on the board.
Very cool. All right, well, I think I've had my fill of WHL talk. Let's move on.
All right, he's back in our good graces. He brought a lot to the table.
He did.
Next week, we'll do an hour, like we'll break down each team in the U.S. division.
Ooh, good. Yeah, maybe we should consider a different podcast for that one, but Patrick Laine has been in Columbus for like a week, I guess, while actually playing games. And he has already been benched by Torts. So on Monday night, they were playing against the Carolina Hurricanes. And he, in the second period, 6 minutes left, he didn't see another shift from then on. I believe he was benched the entire third period. So now here's my question for you guys. And I will sit back and listen to you argue again. When they traded Pierre-Luc Dubois for Patrick Laine and Jack Roslovic, what did they think, or what did Torts think he was going to get from Patrick Laine?
Goals.
He got 3 goals in 4 games.
As advertised, right?
Right. Yeah. So I don't understand. Like, I get that Torts is this hard-nosed guy who's like, I just want the guys to play hard. You know, they'll tell me how much ice time they get, blah, blah, blah. But, like, this is a one-dimensional player. Everyone knows that he's a one-dimensional player who doesn't, you know, back-check and do that kind of stuff very hard.
There was a play where he missed an assignment that led to a goal.
Mm-hmm.
But after the game, Torts said that's not why he benched him. He said there's a number of things that come into play with that, and that'll stay in the locker room. So we don't really know what's going on. But what else could it be? Because it happened in the middle of the game, right? If he was late or something, feels like he just would have scratched him instead of starting him and then benching him halfway through the game. But
yeah, I mean, it's clearly, really know, maybe. It's clearly related to his play. It's not like it's not like a disciplinary
thing. And
it's
something
thing
that happened in that game, I would imagine, right? Because you don't just all of a sudden decide to take his ice time away. The funny thing about this is this was everybody, when that trade happened, there was a lot of people out in the hockey world saying, oh, this is never going to work because he doesn't play defense and, you know, Torts is going to bench him. And I kind of thought, like, no, let's wait and see. I think I have a good feeling about this, but so far, I don't think I'm right.
Speaking of benches, COVID is apparently spreading on them. That was pretty good, right? Good segue. So here's the thing. Okay, we have 4 different teams that are essentially like locked down right now because of COVID spreading throughout the team. So Minnesota, Colorado, Buffalo, and New Jersey have all not played in quite a while. The concerning thing to me is that it seems like, and this is, I'm not a scientist, so don't take this as fact because I don't actually know if it's true or not. But from Michael Russo's story in The Athletic on Monday, he made a really good point that the timeline does actually line up because Andreas Athanasiou had it for Los Angeles, Minnesota played against Los Angeles, then Marcus Foligno had it, and then all of a sudden guys on Colorado had it, and that was like Los Angeles played Minnesota, then a few days later Minnesota played Colorado, right? And now all of a sudden you have all these teams that are locked down. And so it makes you wonder, are the teams giving it to each other? So one of the things that was mentioned in that story is that the NHL is actually starting to do genetic testing through the Mayo Clinic to see if it's the exact same strain. And then that way they can understand if the teams are giving it to each other or if this is just a coincidence. It doesn't feel like a coincidence to me. So the NHL put in some new protocols this week. Basically, they're saying that the teams can't get there more than an hour and 45 minutes before the game. They had to remove all the glass from behind the bench so that it allegedly will help with like ventilation and stuff. I don't know if that stuff is really going to help.
You aren't a scientist, are you?
I'm not a scientist. The other big challenge, too, is that I guess the testing that they do, they test every day, but then it takes them 24 hours to get the test back in most cases because they ship them to New Jersey or something. So there are some gaps here. It's not a perfect system. We've known this all along, right? But I really hope that they can get it figured out and get these gaps filled in to stop things from spreading, because you know we can't have, if this season is actually going to make it through without these guys going into a bubble, like we can't keep shutting teams down for 2-3 weeks at a time. Obviously they can't play when this is happening, right? Because safety is still actually important, even though it kind of doesn't look like that. It just makes you question, like, A, should they really be doing this, and B, what are the chances that they actually get through this thing without going back into a full-on bubble?
Yeah, and it's interesting to see what this strain, different strain or different genetics is going to show, because you mentioned the Minnesota situation. If you look at Buffalo, they were pretty peeved because they played New Jersey on a Saturday. One of the Devils turns out had it because those test results come back, and then they played again the next night, and now all half of Buffalo's team is on the COVID list and they're shut down. Both teams now are shut down. Yeah, I've heard they might be looking at how if they can get those tests back faster, but it just seems counterintuitive to test everybody and then let them play before you have a result in, and especially if they are giving it to each other during the games.
Yeah, it's just a question of the rapid testing and isn't as available as the other.
I think the challenge with the rapid test too is that they're not that accurate. So they're worried that they're going to get a false positive, have a guy sit out, and who knows, maybe they'll end up shutting down a game or whatever. They spent all this money to get a team there, and this, so you know, if you have a false positive and the guy sits out. And so I did read that they're doing both rapid testing every single day plus the one where they send it off. The problem is the rapid testing isn't that accurate, and the one where they send it off doesn't come back until, like Andy said, the following day. So it's like, that doesn't really serve any purpose. So a tough situation all around. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, another offshoot of all this is all these games that are being postponed or rescheduled. And what impact is that going to have down the stretch of the season? Like some teams, if they may have to play every other night, and is that going to wear them out? And or do they not even play a full, 56 games? We end up having to go to point percentage to figure out who gets in the playoffs or not. So there's still a lot to be figured out here.
Yeah. Speaking of point percentages and who gets into the playoffs, we're about a quarter of the way through the season for some teams. They've all played different amounts of games at this point, but we thought it would be a good time to just kind of sit back, look at the standings, and just kind of think about who are some of the surprises and things like that to this point. Because we all had our predictions going into the season, and sure enough, they were pretty much terrible. So we'll start with the Central Division. So the teams that are in the playoff positions right now, and you kind of have to take this with a grain of salt, because like some of the teams have played 9 games, some have played 14. But the teams that are currently in are the Lightning, Blue Jackets, Panthers, and Hurricanes. On the outside, you have the Blackhawks, Stars, Predators, and Red Wings. What surprises you guys from that division?
The Panthers, although we talked about them maybe being a team to keep an eye on. Now, they've only played 9 games as opposed to, Columbus is a point ahead of them, West 14, which actually works for Florida's favor. But they're off to a 6-1-2 start, which is pretty good. The interesting thing, coming into the season, I know I thought, well, if they can get Bobrovsky to be back to what he was, they might be pretty good. But he's not where he was. His save percentage is .881. He started 4 games. Their other goaltender, Chris Drieger, has 5 starts. So he's played more, and he's got a .937 save percentage. So he's actually the one that's giving them the boost right now. Although Bobrovsky's 3-0 with his high save percentage, so they must be outscoring some people in those games. But they're a team that, if they put it together on the goal, they might still hang around up there.
Yeah. So I also had Florida as the thing that surprised me. Most notably, who has been important for them so far is Patrick Hornqvist, who I know, Andy, you had him listed as probably exposed in the expansion draft. And then Carter Verhaeghe, who came over from the Lightning last year, which again just goes to show you like how deep the Lightning are, right? Because Verhaeghe was like, he was buried on that lineup, like in and out. I mean, I think unreal. He was playing on the fourth, now he's got 6 goals and 3 assists. He's got 9 points in 9 games. He's like one of their top scorers. So
it's amazing that Team Tampa put together. You really look at
that,
man.
It's ridiculous. But it just goes to show, right? When you get a coach like Joel Quenneville, who happens to look exactly like your mascot, you just never know what you can pull off. So
Kraken have to get a coach that looks like their mascot, which we don't know what that looks like.
Oh boy,
yet.
Ooh,
so who is your guy? Like Slippy, the underwater monster, or what was that thing called?
Sigmund the sea monster, not Slippy.
Oh, sorry. So then in the East Division, the Bruins.
Oh,
are...
I guess I will pass.
John doesn't have an opinion on the Central, apparently.
Go ahead. We're all waiting.
Well, you know what's surprising is Chicago. Mm. They're kind of in fifth, no matter if you take point percentage or points. We thought they were going to be horrible. They don't have Kirby Dach. They don't have Jonathan Toews, right? They don't really have a goalie. And we expected them to be horrible. And it started really bad, like the first couple of games. So I'm just kind of surprised by that.
So they're not dead last is what you're surprised by.
They're fourth or fifth. Like they're right in there.
So they have a winning record.
Yeah.
So that's what the surprise is.
The East Division, Bruins, Flyers, Capitals, and Islanders are the four teams that are currently inside. Penguins, Devils, Sabres, and Rangers are the four teams outside. What surprises you guys on this one?
This kind of feels like what it should have been, these top four teams.
Yeah.
I thought New York would take a step back. They are just 5-4-2, so it's not like they have a -2 goal differential. They haven't been playing great. It's going to be a good fight between them and Pittsburgh for that last spot.
I think New Jersey's actually kind of, they've only played nine games, right?
Because
they're shut down. But they're 4-3-2 and playing, you know, better hockey than I expected.
Well, Jack Hughes looks so much better this season. It's like he grew up during the offseason.
Exactly.
I think what surprises me is how close this division is. So you have like Bruins and Flyers are pretty far ahead right now. Well, not really. They're, a couple points. But like they look like the cream of the crop. But then you have Capitals, Islanders, Penguins, Devils, Sabres, Rangers, they're all like within a couple points of each other. Mm-hmm. And really, like, there was a point, I think, last week where if one game had gone one way or the other, then every team in the division would have a winning record, which seems impossible because they're all just playing against each other. But currently, so the only team that doesn't currently have at least a 500 record is the New York Rangers, who are 4-5-2. So they're one game below 500, and yet they're still tied in points with the two teams, quote unquote, ahead of them.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting division. It's very tight. I think it'll be fun to watch. I am a little surprised to see how good the Flyers are because they've been like one of the best teams in the league on a lot of metrics. So neither here nor there. The West Division, the Honda West, as it's called, St. Louis leading the way, 7-4-2 for, I guess that's 16 points. Now they've played four more games than the Golden Knights, who are in second. Golden Knights are 7-1-1, so really they're probably the team to beat. Then you have the Avalanche, Coyotes, Ducks, Wild, Sharks, and Kings. Anything stick out to you from there, gentlemen?
Curious about Vegas. Mm-hmm. Now they had a COVID issue, right?
Yep.
So they just got back to playing after a week or so off. They played St. Louis. I don't think they played Colorado yet. I don't think they played Minnesota yet. Have they, Darren?
Have you seen them play
Minnesota? Those to me are kind of the better teams in this division. So is that 7-1-1 record real, or are they just getting fat off the Kings and the Ducks, the Coyotes, who they played a lot of games against?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder that against even, you know, like Minnesota and Colorado and whomever, right? Like when you play the California teams enough times, you're going to get some wins there. Even if you are not like the better team, like you're still going to get some wins. So I hear you. Yeah, I wonder. I mean, we've all thought kind of all along it's going to come down to the Golden Knights in Colorado, and then who else is going to sneak in there? The Blues look like they belong, so they're probably the team that definitely gets in, and then it's just a battle for that fourth spot. So we'll see.
But keep in mind, San Jose is undefeated at home.
Great point, John. All right, let's move on to the North Division.
Hey, you can't argue that.
So Toronto Maple Leafs, 10-2-1. Not enough people are talking about them, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Montreal Canadiens, Winnipeg Jets, Edmonton Oilers are the four teams that are technically in, although let's be honest here, the Oilers are 7-7, so questionable if they really belong. When you look outside at the Canucks, Flames, and Senators, all those teams, well, they're pretty bad, so... anything surprise you, gentlemen, from this one? I have some strong opinions about the bad teams, but I'll hang up and listen first.
Well, there's only seven teams, so odds of making the playoffs are pretty good.
Yeah.
I'd say I'm surprised Calgary hasn't done much more. I expected a little bit more. Obviously, they added Markstrom, and I just expected more from them.
There are two teams that kind of jump out. One, I don't know that I thought Winnipeg would be at this point where they are in third place, 7-3-1. They're playing really well. And then I didn't think Ottawa was going to win the division or anything like that, but to be 2-10-1 and just look terrible.
It's pretty bad.
And have a -26. They have a -26 goal differential. I didn't think they would be this bad. I thought they'd be more competitive. They're playing a lot of young guys, but I still thought that would... I mean, maybe they get better as the season goes. I don't know. If you're an optimist, that's what you hope for. But I just thought they would be a little more competitive than they have been.
I mean, I'm pretty sure all three of us said in our preview show that we thought the Senators were going to be better than people expected. And we were dead wrong. What's the story on the Canucks, Andy? Man, they suck.
They really do suck. They are terrible. Where do you even start? First of all, the defense is a mess. They can't manage the puck to save their lives. They every game it's like three or four turnovers that result directly into odd man rushes. Their top line has been inconsistent. Elias Pettersson started off slow, and then they're not getting any saves. They're giving up. I think they've given up the most goals in the league without checking, but it feels like they have. They're just a mess in every facet of the game, really.
It's just interesting because I thought that they were on such a great track, and it's largely the same team that we saw last year that had some playoff success, right? So it was like, oh, you know what? This is a young team, up and coming. They got all the guys back. You know, they're going to take a step forward this year, and that certainly has not happened. Now, I wonder if we get into the year a little bit, you know, deeper, maybe they kind of figure it out. But it doesn't look good for you right now, Andy. You and your knuckleheads.
I think they're making it easy on people in Seattle who were rooting for them, but now it'll be easier to transition to the Kraken next year.
Very noble.
About them looking good. If you go back to last year, near the end of the year, Markstrom got hurt like the last 3 weeks he was out of the regular season, and they struggled. Mm. And so I think he hit a lot of problems for the Canucks defense last year.
Okay.
And now he's gone. They lost Chris Tanev. That's obviously a loss. They did get Nate Schmidt, but that hasn't been enough to improve their defense.
And even though Toffoli just played a couple of regular season games, and then he's lighting it up in Montreal, which is like, you know, adding insult to injury. So, yeah. And then we should kind of touch on Braden Holtby. And, you know, we've talked about him before, but a lot of people on the interwebs are penciling Holtby in Seattle. And his save percentage, his high-level numbers aren't very good. He's not playing very well to, like, warrant Seattle going after him. I'd much rather like start indexing to Jake Allen in Montreal.
Wow.
And I know that's Darren's favorite player of all time.
Listen, he's been great. I'm going to give him credit. He's been really good in Montreal. So you're right. I mean, we got to keep an eye on what's happening in the league. And what's happening in the league is that Jake Allen is playing really well behind a very good team this year. And Braden Holtby is not playing well. And his Turtles are like, dude, why the fuck did we move all the way up here and go through this whole thing that we went through?
Get stuck at the border, yeah. The thing of being on Holtby is, yes, the team in front of him is terrible, but every now and then you got to make a save for your guys. Like, you got to come up with a big save, and he just hasn't done it consistently. Like, whenever there's a chance, he doesn't bail him out. So at some point, you got to bail out those guys.
That's interesting. It's now time for Sound of Hockey's 3 stars. John, your star of the week.
My star of the week is Jack Roslovic.
Oh, okay.
We've talked about him before.
Nice. Yep.
He's had a great week. You know, we talked about benching Line A earlier in this episode, and maybe all along it was Roslovic that was the big cornerstone of this trade, because he's got 6 points in 4 games over the last week, and he had a game winner on Monday night that was so sick.
Yep.
So if you haven't seen it, go back and watch it. He's playing really well. He's getting about 18 minutes of ice time, and I mean, really cool story, because we talked about him. He's from Columbus originally, wasn't getting in the lineup in Winnipeg, and now all of a sudden he's, I guess, Torts likes him because he's playing.
Andy, your star of the week.
Mine is not a player, but it's a coach, Barry Trotz.
Whoa. Can we allow that?
Yeah, come on. Like,
It doesn't say top players. It says top stars.
Okay.
You didn't
stars.
Read the whole memo. Did you read the appendix?
I only read the regarding in the header of the memo. That's as far
sense.
As I go.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So Barry Trotz, the Islanders, they shut out the Rangers today, 2-0. It was his 850th career win, which puts him into second place behind Scotty Bowman and Joel Quenneville. So he passed Ken Hitchcock tonight. And in classic Barry Trotz form, he was asked about it after the game, and he says, "We're on to Pittsburgh."
So one thing, I'm confused, because you said that he's in second place, but he's behind two coaches. Please explain.
Third place. Sorry, he moved into third. I'm sorry, I misspoke.
Well, I don't know if we can.
Second on the active list.
He moved into third place, second active.
So is he still your star, though, knowing now that he's only in third place and not second?
Yeah.
No, yeah. 850
wins.
He got
a bronze, not a silver.
Okay. And my star of the week is Gritty. So you may have seen. Well, what?
Yeah, wasn't
Darren
just...
He plays
this
sometimes.
This bit has gone downhill.
I'm sure there were some players who did stuff this week. John had one.
Probably. Yeah. Originally I was going to go with Anthony. I was going to go with Anthony Beteto because he scored a goal and has a funny New York accent, but I decided to go with something that I just knew would work with everyone, which was Gritty. So Gritty, I don't know if you saw this. I feel like you probably did because everyone saw this, but so he's got that platform thing that he's, you know, does his whole show on in Philadelphia, which I know we've talked about. So he comes out, they've got an artist with a canvas on an easel, and he comes out wearing a robe, and he throws off the robe, and he's completely, well, not really naked, but like he's Gritty naked. Right?
Naked for Gritty.
Yeah. And he lies down on this couch, and the artist just paints him during the game, which was just hilarious. And the artist did a really good job. He put it together really quickly. It actually was a very good painting. And now I noticed that the painting is always like in the background by his platform every game. So that was awesome stuff. I absolutely loved that bit. I'm so impressed with what the Flyers have done to like continue to make Gritty, who is obviously such a big like superstar across the league last year, right? To make him still somehow an important piece of their games, even though there's no crowd there, you know? It's yeah. Brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant what they're doing. I'm incredibly impressed. So Gritty,
Saw him earlier throw the big hat on the ice when there was a hat trick.
Yeah. So Gritty, you are my star of the week. That wraps up our bits. We now move on to our segments. And our first segment is everyone's favorite segment. Goalie Gear Corner!
I thought our new favorite segment was Top Stars.
No, that's
that's a bit.
First of all, it's three stars. Okay. Second of all, it's a bit. Straight. It's not a segment. So
I'm going to make a chart that I can pin up here.
Okay. So our Goalie Gear Corner this week is David Riddick, who has some new pads to go with their reverse retro Blasty jerseys. And essentially, they are just like white pads with Blasty on them, kind of in the middle, and a little bit of a design in the background. And then at the bottom, there's like some flames. Now, I'm going to just go ahead out and say it. I don't think I like them.
Whoa.
Oh, man.
I don't think I like them that much.
How did it make it through the judgment, the judges?
Because,
to get on the segment?
First of all, it doesn't have to be like my favorite gear to show up in Goalie Gear Corner. It just has to be something that we can talk about, right? So I'm looking at it, and I think if you put that whole setup together with the Blasty jersey, it's just a little too much Blasty, right? Like, I think you just need just the right amount of Blasty, and to me, the right amount of Blasty is just the Blasty that's on the chest, right? Maybe on the mask. I think you can get away with having it on the mask like Markstrom does. And see, I've been on the record as saying I think that Markstrom's Blasty setup is probably my favorite setup of the whole league. But his is more like the pads are a supplement to the Blasty jersey, right? This is just, it's excessive Blasty, in my opinion.
Well, and those Blasties are, those jerseys are black, right?
Yes, they are.
Then with the red and... Mm-hmm. And I wonder what the contrast with the black jersey and the white pads is going to look like.
Well, I mean, he's got a lot of black in there, so I haven't actually seen it. I know they wore the jerseys the other night, but I never saw Riddick in his outfit. So I don't know. I appreciate where he's going with this. I appreciate the commitment to the Blasty bit. I also really appreciate that just universally we have accepted that this horse breathing fire out of its nose, his name is Blasty. I don't know where that comes from, but I'm very pleased that that's what everyone has agreed just universally. He is called Blasty.
I don't like it.
Okay. Why don't you like it, Andy?
I don't know. I don't like it. It's just something about it. Okay. Rubbed me the wrong way.
Cool. So that's our Goalie Gear Corner. We now move on to You Don't See That Every Day. We have two of these. Our first one, John, I think you're going to need to explain this again. Before we started recording, you were trying to explain it to me, and I flat out could not understand. So if you can just start at the top, explain it to me like I'm five, and then hopefully that will carry over to the listeners as well, and they will understand what happened here.
All right. Okay. So Carolina and Columbus are playing a hockey game.
Okay.
And in late in the second period, with about a minute and 15 seconds left, there was a goal scored by Carolina. Torts, who is the coach of Columbus, issued a challenge. And in the NHL, you can issue a challenge, but if you're wrong, you get a 2-minute penalty.
For offside specifically.
For offside specifically, yes. So he issues the challenge. They review it, and it was really quick, and they said, oh, we've reviewed it. Good goal. There's a 2-minute penalty for delay of game.
Right.
So Columbus is now has to kill a penalty after losing the challenge. So the minute and 15 seconds of the remainder of the second period ends without a goal. So the Carolina Hurricanes are still on a power play when the third period begins.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden, they took the penalty off because apparently it should have been reversed. The goal should have been reversed when it was reviewed. So they couldn't go all the way back and take the goal off, but they could erase the penalty that was the time remaining on the penalty that they were assessed for the squandered challenge.
Wow.
How does this happen? I'm not really sure, but Andy might be able to fill in the blanks.
So the linesman went to the official score table to put on the headphones and talk to Toronto, who was reviewing the play. And apparently at the same time, the Blue Jackets were training a new off-ice official. Somehow that off-ice official got on the mic and said, that guy's onside, it's a good goal. Because he'd only seen the first replay, which was inconclusive. The linesman here, good goal. They don't know who they're talking to. They go back out to center ice, say, goal stands, good goal. We're playing on, that's a penalty. They see the second replay, which makes it very clear that he was offside. Toronto is desperately trying to get a hold of the guy in the penalty box who handles all that. But he, because COVID regulations, he has to sanitize the headphones whenever a new person is going to wear them. So he's not wearing them. He's cleaning them, not hearing that they're desperately trying to get a hold of him. And so nothing happens until they get into intermission. And then there's their big meeting, can't take the goal off because they started playing. So that was the compromise, was to just erase the rest of the penalty minutes.
Wow, what a consolation prize that is, huh? I mean, that is so bizarre, because it's like they're completely accepting and just saying, yeah, we screwed this up, so we're going to throw you a bone and take the rest of your penalty off. But really, but like,
the goal counts.
The goal is the thing that they actually care about, you know? Yeah. I mean, that's wild. And I for some reason, I'm imagining picking up that phone in Toronto, I'm imagining Buddy the Elf, like, Buddy the Elf, what's your favorite color? And he's like... Oh, no, buddy. Right. Ooh, is this a good goal? Oh, yeah, good goal. All right. Like, anyway.
Didn't something happen like this to Columbus last year with Torts? There was a malfunction in the way it was supposed to work.
Yeah, there was a
last-second goal or something.
Well, they wanted a couple seconds added back on the clock. They did not. And then I think Cam Atkinson or somebody scored with after the buzzer, like split half second. So, and then it went to a shootout and Corbisalo got hurt. So it was like this big deal. So
I didn't see a meltdown from this one. This seems like this would have warranted a Torts meltdown, but
our other, you don't see that every day. So the Ottawa Senators are playing against the Oilers and Evgeny Dadonov has the puck for the Senators. He's breaking in. Adam Larson kind of tries to tie him up, swats the puck off his stick and just fires it right over Koskinen's shoulder. And Koskinen looks at him like, dude, what are you doing? Right. As he like skates away in shame. So SB Nation NHL tweets this and says, we have an own goal in Edmonton. Nature is healing. Then they responded to their own tweet and they just did Bob McKenzie's tweet from 2016, June of 2016. It says, trade is one for one. Adam Larson for Taylor Hall. It's a great deal.
That's awesome.
Now, I know that he's done this before. This is not his first time scoring on his own goal. So maybe you don't see it every day, but you do see it once every couple of years. So
it's got to be a sinking feeling to knock it in past your own goalie.
Yeah. You know, I gave up a couple of goals to own players during my career, and it's a bad feeling for both the goalie and the player. Although in both cases, the players kind of laughed at me for letting it in. So I don't know. We now move on to our weekly one-timers. Our first weekly one-timer. A quick college hockey update. We haven't spoken about college hockey in a bit. I know we were talking about it a lot before NHL hockey returned, and then we're like, oh, NHL hockey's here. Ooh, shiny things. But, you know, last time we talked about it, the Minnesota Gophers were undefeated. I think they were like 10-0 or something like that at the holiday break, and now they've kind of fallen back down to earth a little bit. So they got swept this weekend by my Wisconsin Badgers. A couple of big, big wins by the Badgers. So now the Badgers are up to sixth. North Dakota is the number one team. Minnesota is down to five. Boston College, Minnesota State University, and UMD round out the top five.
What happened to Minnesota? Because that first half, they hadn't even trailed in a game.
I know. I don't honestly know, because now I'm not watching as much because I'm so focused on the NHL, right?
I'm with you.
Ever since the holiday break, they just haven't found their mojo anymore. So, I mean, that happens, right? In college hockey, I know that, especially in college hockey, because they have this long layoff right in the middle of the season where everybody goes home and they stop playing together. So, like, a team that has incredible momentum might come back and lose it and vice versa, right? Like, I remember the year that the Badgers won the national championship when I was a freshman. They weren't that good for a period, like, I think it was just after the break that it was like, maybe they aren't that good. And like, they had been the number one team, and then all of a sudden they took off, and there was just no stopping them. So these things happen. It's kind of a roller coaster of a season. We'll see how it ends up here in a month or two. But, and then the women's side, thought we'd give an update as well. So Colgate is the number one team in the nation at 11-4-1. Again, my Wisconsin Badgers, who also played Minnesota this weekend, ended up with a win and a tie there. So they're in second place. Then Clarkson, Northeastern, and Penn State round out the top five for the women. So that's our college hockey update within our weekly one-timers. Our next weekly one-timer. Patrick Marleau has passed Ron Francis, ever heard of him, in games played. He's now tied for third place behind Gordie Howe and Mark Messier, or as Andy would like to call it, second place.
Second place. That's right. Third place is a new second place. Yeah.
So is that good? I don't think I ever realized that Mark Messier played that many games. Like, is it good to play that many games? I don't know.
Well, I guess it means that somebody feels he can still contribute for a long time.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. And that's all we have to say about that. Our next weekly one-timer. Austin Matthews has scored 10 goals in his last 8 games. Is that good?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's good. I love that these two things that we just commented on are easily like good enough to have put them in our 3 stars, but instead we picked Barry Trotz and Gritty. Yeah, Matthews has been really great, though. I gotta say, like, I know that, you know, the Leafs don't get enough coverage, so I want to make sure that we give them their due here. But like, yeah,
somebody's gotta talk about Matthews.
He just shoots nonstop, and he's got a great shot, and he's accurate, and he also has these great hands. So he really has become this all-around great offensive player. And I mean, we knew this all along, but you know, he has a chance to be the leading goal scorer this year. He has a chance to be like a 50-goal scorer in a 56-game season. So he really is on a tear right now, and he is actually worth watching, as much as I hate to say that.
He's doing it all with a really creepy mustache.
Yeah, I know. On the game Monday against Vancouver, they had like a graphic of him talking about all the goals they had scored, and it was like frozen on him. And for some reason, the picture that they chose, he's licking his mustache like as he shoots.
Oh.
So like his tongue is out just touching that just filthy mustache. That looks like he belongs in like a Colombian drug cartel or something, but he's playing well.
You know, one thing you should, if you catch a Toronto game or you have the opportunity, is their power play is pretty slick. Yeah. It's like, I checked it a couple days ago, but their percentage execution of a goal on a power play is like 40%. Wow. It's insane.
Gee, that's
and they just, you know, because you have Marner on there, Matthews, and they're just whipping around. Wayne Simmons, unfortunately, just got hurt. He's going to be missed 6 weeks, and he's been playing. He's playing really well. So anyway, check out their power play because it's pretty fun to watch because they just whip it around like nobody's business.
And tons of movement too, right? Like sometimes you really know exactly how a team is set up and what they're trying to do. You don't really know because they're like moving around all the time. They're passing it right through the seam. So you're right. That is fun to watch. That wraps up our weekly one-timers. And we close the show with our tweets of the week. Andy, your tweet of the week.
So my tweet of the week comes from friend of the pod, Greg Wyshynski.
Uh-huh.
And he tweeted out the following. The Hurricanes have hired Justin Williams as special advisor to the general manager. Justin Schrute, quote, correction, special general manager.
Okay.
So if you're a fan of The Office, you'll get that.
I gotcha. All right. My tweet of the week comes from Dmitry Filipovich. It's a picture of Braden Holtby skating to the bench for, I presume, a delayed penalty. And the caption just says, Holtby didn't even know it was a delayed penalty. He's just straight up leaving. And then somebody responded to that, Clarissa at Quinn's Edgework, and it says, Holtby and Demko looking for Canucks defensemen, and it's the weekend, like roaming around backstage at the Super Bowl during that part where it was really sickening because the, you know, everything was like spinning. Thought that was funny. Anyway, that's my tweet of the week. John, your tweet of the week. Don't tell me you're still boycotting.
Yeah, I'd say I am.
Oh.
You know, because last week that worked out so well when I said, oh, I want to do games on my radar,
yeah,
the NWHL games. Oops.
And then Robot Man had to come in and explain why you had ruined everything.
What do you mean he came in? He was part of the show we recorded.
Yeah, you're right.
That was a big episode for Robot.
That was live. We did it live.
You're right. Robot Man played a big part.
You rang. Hi, guys. Robot Man here. As long as you summoned me, I might as well tell you that the Penguins hired Ron Hextall as their general manager and Brian Burke as their president of hockey operations. Oh, and Mikko Koivu retired.
So you just don't have one? Is that what's happening?
I don't have
one. Oh, my God. Do you have a game on the radar? Do you have anything that you want to share with our listeners as long as we're here?
Game on the radar. Definitely Toronto, Montreal are going to be playing each other this week. They play Wednesday, and then they're going to play Saturday, which is going to be Hockey Night in Canada. That's going to be on NHL Network or CBC if you get that. That should be a big game because both are the top two teams in the Scotia North, or what I like to refer to as the Canadian League.
Sure.
Because the Canadian media doesn't talk about the rest of the teams anymore, just the Canadian teams.
I love a good original six matchup, as I know you do. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah, but this time there are actually two good teams. That's the difference.
That's true. That's very true. All right.
So you're not just resting on laurels here.
You know, I always wonder about people named Laurel. Right? Because, like, if you're resting on a laurel, I really feel bad. When does Laurel get to rest? You know, just resting.
You know, I know two laurels. I'll ask them.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, I know three. Never mind. Perfect. I know three.
So get them all together and then have them lie down, and then you can rest on them and say you're resting on your laurels.
It's always like, wanted to rest on my laurels. Yeah.
All right, that wraps up episode 124. This has been a lot of fun. We have not had a review, so please do leave your review on iTunes, and we will read it next week as long as it's 5 stars. Subscribe on Stitcher, subscribe on Spotify, subscribe on iTunes. We will talk to you all next week for episode 125. Cheers.